You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Jets. It is Thursday, January 24th, 2019, and I'm John B. from gangrenenation.com. The Jets officially announced the hiring of Dell Loggins yesterday. He will be both the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach. I had plenty to say on him on yesterday's show. And we are doing a mailbag today. These will be questions from the comment section of gangrenenation.com. Each week we ask for your mailbag questions, and there are plenty of questions on Loggins. So we'll talk about this hire plenty on our show today, as well as what we said yesterday. Our first question. Well, Gase got his man. Dell Loggins is officially in the building as the Jets' new offensive coordinator, and he's slated to be Darnold's second offensive coordinator in as many years. What impact, if any, would you expect that could have on the Jets' offensive outlook and, more importantly, Darnold's development? Well, for Darnold's development, I mean, I've been of the thought that whoever was hired as coach, and this was more head coach than offensive coordinator, but probably also offensive coordinator, unless the Jets made a great, great hire, my view has always been that it's more likely that Darnold is going to help these coaches more than these coaches are going to help Darnold, just because of the caliber of prospect Darnold is, just because of how he's processed the game. If the question seems to be getting at the idea that this is Darnold's second system in 2 years, I think that that's generally overstated. Quarterbacks have to learn new systems in this league all the time. Darnold had to come in and learn a new system last year, and I don't think the issue was so much him learning the system. I just think it was a matter of him getting acclimated to the NFL. I think it was the shakiness of some of the supporting cast around him that led to some of his up and down play. He learned a new system last year and it was fine. I don't think learning a new system this year is going to be that big of a deal. A lot of people tell you that in the NFL, everybody generally runs the same stuff. You'll see a lot of the same concepts. The biggest difference in a lot of ways is just the terminology is different. The way they call the plays is different. The language of the play calls, that's really the biggest difference. So I don't think that that's going to have a big impact. And, I just don't, and this is my view, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I feel like this would be a more significant hire if Darnold was a guy who was a little more of a project than he is. I don't really view Sam Darnold as a huge project, so I think he'll be fine. I mean, honestly, I think he'd be fine no matter who the Jets hired. I don't think he's going to get a ton of help. I don't think this was a particularly great hire. I think in terms of offense, Gase does some things that may help Darnold, that may help maximize Darnold a bit. I like some of his play designs. He'll give Darnold a lot of freedom at the line to engineer the offense based on what Sam sees the defense give him pre-snap and post-snap. So I think there are certain elements that may help him out a little bit, but I don't think it's going to have a huge impact. I don't think that this is a guy, but I also don't think, I think there are hires they could have made. A better hire may kind of help maximize Sam a little more. So I think in that area, it hurts a little bit, at least when we're talking. And this question seems to be specifically about the hire's effect on developing Sam Darnold. I think Sam Darnold would develop no matter who they hired. I don't think this adds anything to the table. I don't think that this hire in itself is going to sink Sam Darnold's career, though. Next question. John, following up on the breaking news, I know Gase has hired Loggins as his offensive coordinator because he feels comfortable working with him at Miami. This seems analogous to last year's situation with Bowles and Casey Rogers, which was not at all helpful to the defense. Like most folks, I'm not enthused about it either, but when I think about it, considering that Gase will be calling the offensive plays anyway, why would a more accomplished coach want to take the position? In other words, under these conditions, does it really matter who the offensive coordinator is? Well, sure, I think it matters. There's a difference between Gase calling the plays and the offensive coordinator being irrelevant. Now, as I said yesterday on the podcast, I don't think that this is as big of a deal as hiring Greg Williams to run the defense was, because Greg Williams is going to be totally in charge of the defense, whereas Loggins will not be totally in charge of the offense. This is going to be the Gase system that they're going to implement. So in that from that standpoint, and Gase sounds like Gase is going to call the plays. So that's you know another factor here. So this is not going to be, he's not going to have autonomy over the offense. But that said, I mean, I think he's clearly going to have an impact on the way this thing is run. Casey Rogers had an impact on the way the defense was run. And that's the analogy that worries me, is this another Casey Rogers situation where the head coach is bringing in his friend who's not really up to the job? These two did not really produce much in Miami. I know the circumstances around them were not great. The talent was not great, but you know, the results were also not great. I don't think that's a team that necessarily overachieved. So I think that there are reasonable concerns. I think the fact that Loggins was also hired, you know, Loggins was not just hired as the offensive coordinator, he was hired as the quarterback's coach. So, you know, he'll be working a lot with Sam. I think that matters as well. And I'll tell you why I think it matters. Is there a chance you would have struggled to find a more established guy? Maybe. I don't think you could rule that out, though. I don't think that's necessarily a guarantee that no established guy would want to come work for the Jets. I mean, you could have a situation, like I said on yesterday's show, like in Cleveland, where you have the offensive head coach in Freddie Kitchens, the guy from the offensive background, but you also bring in Monken, who did a good job last year with Tampa Bay, who you know got plenty of head coaching buzz during this hiring cycle. So maybe you could have had a situation where Gaze and a strong offensive mind collaborate and try and build something special. A couple guys working together in their area of expertise to build something really special. But the other option would be to do what the Chiefs have done. Look, we all know it's pretty much Andy Reid's offense in Kansas City, but he's done a great job taking young coaches and developing. You know, development's not just about players. You like to develop young coaches. You like to kind of teach them how to build an offense. And eventually, you know, you can, after they get some experience, after they learn their way around building an offense, they can kind of take over on their own, and they can eventually they'll move on and you develop the next guy. I mean, look at what happened with the Chiefs when they had Doug Peterson and then they had Matt Nagy, and these guys have now Bieniemy's running the offense. So, you know, you could have found a young guy who's maybe not ready, maybe who needs a little few training reels, maybe doesn't have the experience to run an offense on his own, but with Gaze overseeing him, Gaze could kind of teach him how to run an offense. And, you know, you develop a quality young coach, and that gradually Gaze can hand over the keys to him, give him more and more responsibility, and focus on some of the other aspects of running the team. Gaze can focus on, you know, overseeing the entire operation a little bit more, pay more attention to his head coaching duties and delegate a little bit. And then if that guy gets a head coaching job, then you find the next young guy, and maybe Gaze takes on a bigger role and eventually hands over more and more each year to the new guy. That's what you want to do. I mean, you want to have as many quality offensive minds in the room as possible. I think if the Jets had hypothetically hired a stronger coach, I don't think anybody would be saying that this coordinator hire is irrelevant. I think saying that this coordinator hire is irrelevant is people kind of trying to talk them into a shaky hire. I don't think there's any way you can look at this and say that the Jets are a better team because of this hire. So, another example of this would be the Rams. You know, the Rams have hired some pretty well-respected young coaches, one of whom is now, when Sean McVay was first hired, he brought in Matt LaFleur, who was an up-and-coming coach. Now Matt LaFleur is a head coach in this league. So, I mean, there were a couple different ways you could have gone about it, but you really could have. I think the best route, even if you could not get the experienced guy, I'm not sure whether you could, I'm not sure whether you couldn't have, but you could have brought in somebody who's young, a young up-and-comer, and kind of taught him and given him, kind of broken him in easily, you know, given him and gradually built up his responsibility over time. So I think that this was, as I said on yesterday's show, I really feel like this hire was a missed opportunity. We continue with our Dowell Loggins questions, mailbag questions here on this Thursday episode of the Locked On Jets podcast. Lame. We all know Gaze is handling all the offensive coordinator duties, but with such an obvious lame hire, if this offense tanks and Sam shows zero growth, will Gaze have the cojones to fire Loggins? Will McCagnon? Well, yeah, I mean, I think if the offense is stagnant and the quarterback does not grow, somebody's going to have to walk the plank. And usually what happens is the first guy to walk the plank is the offensive coordinator, because that's the easiest guy to fight. That's the easiest guy to get rid of. You know, you fire the head coach, you kind of upend the organization. Yeah, it's a drastic change. So usually the first move is to fire the offensive coordinator. So I mean, I would anticipate he would be the guy that would walk the plank, because I think there would be a lot of pressure on the Jets in that circumstance to bring somebody new in. So my guess would be yes. I mean, who knows? Who knows? Who knows in reality? I mean, Jets have kept. I mean, the Jets have avoided firing people who deserve to be fired a lot. So, I mean, I couldn't guarantee it. In a logical scenario, I would say the answer would be yes. And maybe I'm giving the Jets a little too much credit by saying it's a logical scenario. Next question, Williams versus Williams. Who do you think is/was the better prospect coming out? Leonard Williams or Quinnen Williams from Alabama? Do you see any similarities between the two? Well, I think, you know, ceiling might be similar. I mean, I remember when Leonard Williams was coming out, his ceiling was viewed as, I mean, his ceiling was almost like an immortal player, you know, possibly legendary player. Quinnen Williams is getting a lot of hype as well. They're viewing him as a potential elite defensive tackle. I think the players are different coming out in a couple areas. I think that their styles are different. I think Leonard Williams was a guy who relied mainly on his strength, his power, just brute force, whereas Quinnen Williams has more athleticism, more quickness that he uses, although he also has power. I also think Quinnen Williams is more developed. I think Leonard was still kind of learning how to play the game. He was in college, I think he was relying just more on being more powerful than the opposition, whereas Quinnen Williams is more refined. He uses good hand technique. I think he's more consistent with his pad level. And keep in mind, I'm also going off what I remember from Leonard Williams 4 years ago, and we're still in the kind of early stages of evaluating these prospects this year. There's still a lot of the process to go with Quinnen Williams, but I think that that's where I would say is I think that their ceilings are probably in the same ballpark. I think Quinnen Williams is more developed, though. He's going to be more refined as a rookie than Leonard Williams. He's coming into the league more pro-ready. And Leonard Williams was not bad as a rookie, by the way. I mean, he had a pretty good rookie season. But, you know, he was still kind of learning how to play the game. He didn't really know how to play yet, and he was still playing the game effectively, whereas Quinnen Williams knows how to use his hands. So, and again, stylistically, Quinnen is relies more on quickness than Leonard did. Next question, would you be open to trading down with the Giants, and what are your thoughts on the history of the two teams and the lack of trades? Well, I think the question is, would I be comfortable trading down with the Giants, and will it happen? There are two different answers to that. Would I trade down with the Giants? Yes, I would. I think that avoiding trading down with the Giants just because you share a stadium with them, just because they're the crosstown rival, I mean, I don't really care that much about the Giants. I mean, they're a team that you're not competing against them in the division. You're not competing against them for playoff spots in the AFC. Yes, I understand back pages, media, all that. But they're a team you play once every 4 years. You know, you give them a quarterback. Yeah, fine. I know you'll have to hear about how the Jets gave the Giants a quarterback. Well, guess what? You'll see that quarterback once every 4 years. You'll never compete against them again for anything meaningful unless there's a Subway Super Bowl. But I think, you know, the Jets have to. Jamal Adams said it best. This team needs more dogs. This team needs more good players. They did a lot of good players, and I think the Jets need to trade down. So if the Giants are willing to supply, and, you know, there's very few instances in life where things match up so neatly, but the Giants actually own the sixth pick this year. The Jets own the third. So I think we established last year that the price of business for moving up from 6 to 3 for a quarterback is three second-round picks. Now, the Giants may not be able to give 3 second round. I don't think the Giants want to give 3 second rounders over the next 2 years. I don't think they can give up 3 second rounders over the next 2 years because of, you know, I have to remember the Jets had 2 second round picks heading into last year's draft that they could give the Colts. So you'd have to find you give this year's second rounder, next year's second rounder, and then some mix up of picks, some blending of picks that equals another second rounder. I think that's the price of doing business with the Jets to move up from 6 to 3. But if they're willing to give that, look, the Jets have got it. Jets need a lot of good players. Jets need to add a lot. I don't think the Jets are in a position to turn the Giants down just because they're the crosstown rival. I think cutting off your nose to spite your face. The Jets need to worry about their needs, not preventing their crosstown rival from obtaining their needs. So I think that the Jets should make the deal. I don't think they will, though. And, you know, what do I think about the lack of history of trades between these two teams? I think there has a lot to do with it. The Giants don't want to help the Jets. Jets don't want to help the Giants because they don't want to hear about it in the media for a decade about how they helped their crosstown rival procure a franchise quarterback. You know, last year the Jets did not even call the Giants because they knew the Giants weren't going to deal with them. In fact, I remember reading one article that the Jets apparently didn't even call the Giants because they were afraid the Giants were going to put the second pick on the trade block to a team like Buffalo. and a team that was needy at quarterback and say, hey, the Jets are calling us for this pick. You better trade up. The Jets didn't want to call the Giants and allow the Giants to use them as leverage to be able to trade down last year when the Giants owned the 2 pick. So I think a lot of it's media hype. I think a lot of it's the reaction of the fan base. I think a lot of fans would be upset. But if you look at it logically, I just don't see any problem with it. The Jets can't worry about the Giants getting a quarterback. Jets need to worry about themselves. Jets need to worry about adding more good players to this roster because they need a lot of them. And if they can trade down and procure extra picks, I'm all for it. Our next question. If all the pass rushers are off the board and we can't find a trading partner, is there a position of a top 3 pick worthy outside of defensive tackle? I mean, look, and I can understand if you want one of these premium pass rushers, and these premium pass rushers may tempt me, but even if those pass rushers are on the board, I almost feel like the Jets need to look to get out of this pick. I said this in the last segment. I mean, the Jets just need so many more talented players on this team that they have to stockpile picks, and they're entering this. They're down the second round because of the trade they made last year. I mean, they got to first, I think if nothing else, they got to get back into this year's second round. Because they're just in the second round is the best value proposition in most drafts because there's still a lot of good players available and the contract values go way down. So there's a reasonable chance you can find a star level player for a very cheap deal over a four-year stretch. So I think the Jets have to, I'd try and trade down multiple times just because the Jets really need to start stockpiling picks. The Jets need to add more picks. Jets need to add more players, and more than anything, they need to give themselves more chances. They need to give themselves, build in a little more margin for error because I really do think one of the reasons they've struggled so much to draft effectively is drafting is inherently a risky endeavor. I mean, nobody can know for sure how a 21, 22 year old player is going to translate into how their NFL career is going to pan out. I mean, you're trying to project, you know, a 10 to 15 year career for a guy who's 21, 22, who's played at a much lower level. There's a lot of risk involved there. So, if I have 2 second round picks, I can bat 500 and I still end up with a good player. Whereas if you only, go with 1 pick each round, you have to bat 1,000 to end up with a good player in that round. So, I mean, I think that even if these pass rushers are on the board, even if these edge guys are on the board, I think you'd have to strongly consider it trading down because the Jets just need more players. This team's not one player away. This team needs to add a lot of talent. Next question, what will it take for Maccagnan to get fired? If the Jets go 6-10, do you think he gets fired? I think he survives 2019, but what about 2020? What does it take to keep his job after 2020? Playoffs or fired? Well, it's up to the owner, and I mean, the ownership situation is unclear because, ambassador positions, sometimes guys just get tired of being an ambassador and decide to come home. So it's not like out of the realm of possibility that Woody Johnson just decides, I want to come home. And then that's a whole wild card, that adds a whole element to the situation. So the first question is, who's the owner? I think that's a good question, and I think that the expectations should be high this year because the Jets tried to sell us on the idea that this roster is more talented than people think, that this, that they've got this top pick, that they have all this cap space, that the quarterback's going to improve, and they sold us the one problem was coaching, and now they fixed the coaching problem. So I don't know why would it not be a playoffs or bust year, but I'm not sure that that's how it's going to pan out. I mean, it's kind of tough for me to believe that this GM is still here. So, if you ask me, I would have thought the GM would get fired after a 4-12 season this year. So it's tough to say. I mean, is he going to be able to talk his way into another year after this, or maybe 2 more years and try and say, well, it's the coach's first year? And even then, it makes no sense because the owner told you one of the reasons they hired the coach was that he's an experienced head coach and he knows the division, which are by definition things that help you in year one. Those are things that only help you year one because after year one, any coach you hired would know the division and would be, have experience being a head coach. So even then, I think the argument would be weak. But, this GM he survived against all odds to this point. So, I mean, if Chris Johnson's still here, and now, again, Woody's a wild card, but if Chris Johnson's still here, would he be willing to admit such a big mistake after 1 year, or would he wait 2 to 3 years? I really don't know. It's kind of amazing. I tend to agree that Maccagnan probably survives past 2019, which I'm not sure will be justified. But at the same time, you know, this thing's set up perfectly for the Jets to claim progress, because this team's going to win more than four games next year just based on Sam Darnold. This team's going to win more than four games, so they'll be set up to claim progress. You know, five wins or more, like, I theoretically can claim progress. So you know, I think that's the question. I think my guess is, my hunch would be, that after you let them hire a new coach, Maccagnan probably gets 2 to 3 more years. Will he be gone in 2020? I mean, at some point, doesn't the GM have to make the playoffs? But I don't know. I mean, this team has been run so erratically, you would think that he'd have to make the playoffs. I mean, I would think under a normal circumstance, he would have been gone already, or he'd be feel lucky to have kept his job. And this year would certainly be a playoffs or bust year, but I'm not convinced that's the case. So we could be looking at another 2 to 3 years. Tough to say. Anyway, that's all for today. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Hope you have a great Thursday, and we'll be back again tomorrow.